You are listening to Rift Overcast.
It's our game. Not the one we made, it's the one we play.
The team here plays the game a lot.
We really think differently about MMOs than what a lot of people do.
Our game isn't the game it was a year ago.
This game changes all the time. Since launch, we've been non-stop planning out what to do next.
It's all about listening to the players.
Hello, welcome to episode 7 of Rift Overcast. My name is Matt, and with me I have Joe.
Hey.
I'd also like to welcome to the show our community voice guest host, Mythblaze.
How you doing?
We've got a slew of topics for you today, loads of PvP talk, but first let's run over a few announcements. The Defiance gameplay trailer has been released. That's Trion's new game coming out. I believe this is the one that's in conjunction with Sci-Fi Channel, so if you haven't seen that, go watch the trailer for that. It looks pretty good. It's mostly a shooter, I believe, and it's supposed to run in line with the show, so things in the game will affect the show and vice versa. Elrar has confirmed on the forums that rewards from the daily expert dungeons will not reward infernal marks come 1.8 if you have them saved up. So that is any expert dungeon random dailies that you've done before the patch and have not accepted the reward for yet, those will not reward infernal marks, because currently I believe on the PTS they are, and that is actually a bug that they are going to be fixing. So do not hoard those rewards. It's not going to do you any good. Zone events are kind of lacking right now too. The number of rifts don't seem to scale with the number of rifts are scaling down with zone population, but the objectives do not scale. There's this one, I don't remember the name of it, maybe you do, Joe, but that one event in Stillmore has you returning, I believe, 500. Is it 250 or is it 500?
It's 250.
Oh, it's
250. I don't remember the name of the
event. So you have to return 250 objective items from killing monsters of rifts. And when there's very low zone population or participation for that event can take absolutely forever. And that's a lot of that has to do with that people are closing those rifts to get the items, and then you have to return 250 and there's like two rifts left. And you have to go all the way to the other side of the zone for the one rift that's open in the whole zone. So really, I mean, we've seen this happen with a few of the other events too. It just hasn't had such an impact on the time to completion as this one event in Stillmore has.
Yeah, and there also should be more turn-in areas, that's for sure. The one in Fallen Tor, I believe, is not sufficient enough for sure.
Yeah, there's like three turn-in locations for this one event. It's the one where you're racing against the opposite faction to collect the 250 and spawn your hero, which then will spawn the boss to the event. Your hero will fight the boss along with your faction. And there's only three turn-in locations for the Guardians. It's over at Thalan Tor in Stillmore, which is just north of Xerath's Return. And that's like all the way top left, almost, of the map. So when you have to travel all the way down more towards Phoenix Rise and such, the travel time to get one turn-in out of 250 is just absurd.
Especially since you get no increased rewards for participating in this part. As you know, if you just kill the boss at the end, you get the same amount of rewards, so there's almost no motivation to actually do this event.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point too, is they did a really good thing on the Ember Isle where if you participate in the phase, you get the bonuses, and I really think that that's something that they need to apply to the other endgame zones as well for their events, being Iron Pine, Shimmer Sand, and Stillmore.
I would definitely be more inclined to do those events. It's kind of funny, when I see an Emerald event, like, I drop everything and I go there. If I see another one, I look what event it is, you know. If I see that event, I most of the time wait until there's, you know, almost all the Shade Stones, which is the item you have to require, is, you know, turned in before I actually go there.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people, I think, do, is they wait, because you can see what stage, I believe, the event is in by looking on your map and mousing over the zone icon for that zone. it'll give you the event progress, and you can just wait until the boss spawns before you even bother to go out, and then you go out, you kill the boss, and you get the rewards for it, because there's no other reason to contribute to the previous phases.
Exactly.
Now, the problem is they could spawn more rifts. It used to be ridiculous. Like, I remember when I first started playing, what, like, a zone event in Free March used to look like. So we started on Defiant side. And it would just be, there would be just such an obscene amount of death rifts that, I mean, you would be at one, and from where you were standing, you could see six or seven others. Like, it was just ridiculous. You could barely even see the map when you opened your map. And it was awesome like that. I'm not saying that they need that many more rifts during an event, but this should be enough, I think, especially when there's an event that there's only one turn in on the entire map for it, turn in location on the entire map for it. This should be enough rifts that you can farm around the turn in area.
Well, it wouldn't be so bad if there was multiple turn in areas. That way, you know, whereas now you have to travel so far to get one. That's another thing, you can only carry one item at once. If you're able to carry maybe a handful, it would also, I mean, there's multiple ways they could, you know, make this event more enjoyable.
For that specific event, definitely. I think it would be an excellent option to allow you to carry more than one. Although, this same issue applies to other events too, where you have to defeat a certain amount of invasions and close a certain amount of rifts. Like, if you have to close, you know, 10 water rifts and defeat, whatever, 40 water invasions, the invasions spawn from the rifts. So when people are going and closing the rifts and there's only three or four up at a time, or sometimes less, you're not getting any invasions, and then you're sitting around waiting for another rift to come up just so that you can complete the objectives. And it's mainly because the required objective number is so high compared to, you know, the rift spawning, because the zone population is low. They just need to spawn more so that you can complete that faster with less people, you know. But I think their worry is that if they spawn too many, then the zones are going to become overrun because there's not enough people to deal with them.
That's why I think that how they linked all the zones together, you know, with having one major event spawn at once as opposed to multiple, they should also somehow take a percentage of all the zones' population rather than just base it on sheerly that one zone's population. Because obviously, if people see an event, they're going to, like, run to that. So not just people, like, if events spawn still more, there's going to be people from, you know, Sanctum, Shimmer Sand, wherever, going there. So sometimes the zones, the events are so fast because it's, you know, the event is determined on, I don't know, 20 people, but, like, 40 people from another zone flock there. So we, like, overrun it.
Well, let's move on to some of our PvP discussion, because we've got a ton of PvP topics to run over. First off, Myth, maybe you can clarify this for us a little bit. What is this stat disparity that keeps coming up about PvP versus PvE gear? Because there seems to be a lot of opinion about 1.8 and the new Infernal Dawn raid gear really throwing this out of whack.
A good example would be, let's take relics. Once you obtain a relic item, for example, I use in PvP the Undertow rifle because it's better, and I can hit harder. But to take it to the next step, I'll use two or three piece PvE gear because it will grant hit in PvP. Hit is a counter to the player's mitigation. I've gone from not being able to, as this is an example, not being able to remove a rogue's sidesteps with my purge as a marksman, to being able to remove their sidesteps and render their cooldown completely useless just by getting about 250 hit. And my damage goes up so drastically. Compared to even a fully geared player, I can burn a player that has 1400 plus valor just as fast as if I was wearing full PvE gear just by adding those key pieces into PvP.
So it's not just the power of the individual item. A lot of the stat disparity is coming out of a issue with hit rating in PvP as well, then.
Yes.
That explains a lot to me. I think I told you pre-show a bit. I've got a rank 27 rogue, and, you know, I've run a 0-point Blade Dancer. I'm running the Bloodstalker spec, which is an Assassin-Riftstalker hybrid. I believe I'm currently 40 Assassin, 26 Riftstalker. and then I run a 0-point Blade Dancer for the sidesteps. And there are times where I hit sidesteps, being up against, you know, especially when I'm outranked, being up against fully geared and max rank, like Warriors, for example, and I hit the sidesteps, and it seems like it does absolutely nothing.
Well, with the Warriors, if you're fighting anything that has Void Knight in it, that Purge always always connects, and it removes three buffs from you, three beneficial buffs. A while ago, that Purge from Void Knight, I believe it's called Spellbreaker, it was not even affected by line of sight. So he could not even be looking at you and just have you as a focus target and purge you.
So how much hit do you need for PvP? Assuming that they don't change this, which I think this needs to be changed, obviously. I think a lot of people feel like this needs to be changed. But currently it's not being changed. So how much hit do you need in PvP?
I would recommend between 2 to 250 hit.
So what's the best way to get that then? I mean, for example, say somebody who is in majority tier 2 dungeon gear. Like they've done experts and they're down to rank 20 or something like that. What's the best way to get the hit then?
Well, first of all would be runes. Using hit runes on all your PvP weapons. Then you can try and work in your helmet. Use PvE helmet and PvE gloves because they both grant hit. Even if they're not necessarily the best, you should definitely see an overall benefit in PvP by gaining hit.
Would you go as far to say that it would be worth tweaking your build to attain some of those hit passives?
Definitely, if you're able to. But doing so much, for example, like a marksman rogue, if you drop below 44 points, you're losing the whole point of really playing marksman because you're losing eradicate and taking a rather significant damage hit. You have to weigh the appropriate stat weights.
I guess that's sort of what I'm getting at is, you know, how much should a newer player emphasize on the damage in their build versus simply getting the hit? Like, take marksman, for example. If you don't have, say, 200 hit, or say you're not even close to it, say you don't even have, you know, you can't even reach 100 hit, you've got two runes with 18, and then I forget how much hit comes on the weapon runes, the weapon hit runes, do you remember?
I believe 13 each.
You're looking at 18, I'm so horrible with the math, that's what, 36?
Yeah, plus 26.
Plus 26. So, yeah, so you're not even at 100 yet. You're going to have to go into your talents for something. So, take a marksman, for example. Your eradicate isn't going to really do you anything if you don't have, say, that 3% hit.
Well, they killed the hit for rogues. Rogues really don't have any talents anymore, except in marksman that give you 3% hit. The Blade Dancer was changed. The functionality was removed to no longer grant hit, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I remember now. Now it increases, that same talent increases the attack power contribution to combo point builders, I believe now.
I believe Warriors still have a hit bonus, though.
Yeah, Warriors have Beastmaster. Several. Yeah, Beastmaster has one. Paladin has one, a really huge one, too, right? Paladin is 3 out of 3 for 45 hit rating.
Yeah, and Champion has one, too.
So there you have it, 200 hit. Do you think they're going to change this? Like, has there been any, have you seen any response from the devs or from Trion about this hit disparity?
Recently in a conversation that was posted to the Rift forums that a player took screenshots of from the PTS that I believe it was Dagler, I believe. He was paying notice that this is an issue, but ultimately it didn't really pan out to any positive answer or solution to fix it.
I believe in that same post, he did also, or that conversation there in that screenshot, because I read through that, and he said that there were PvP updates coming in the next patch, following 1.8.
Yes, and I'm disappointed. That pained me a lot to read. Most of the time, I PvP. I don't run tier 2s, I don't participate in world events. I raid. It's hard to say whether I do it out of necessity for PvP, but I do enjoy raiding as well. It's more of a side bonus, because the PvE gear does help in PvP.
That's kind of funny, because I remember when the PvP gear was helping in PvE before, and you would get to rank 8 just to get the PvP weapon for HK.
Yeah, now the whole table has turned.
So why are you disappointed? Because, I mean, isn't this good news? Because now you know that there are updates, like, prepared that they're working on, and it's going to be the next patch. Granted, it's not going to be this one. But you got maybe a couple of months away.
I've been playing for for quite a long time in Rift. Almost the whole year it's been out, and even before from beta. And they were really good players. And over time, you're slowly seeing the players that are good, that are very competent in PvP and function well together, they're disappearing. It's all over the Rift forums. The disappointment from the PvP community is there. We want new content. People are expressing their voice, and it's like it's going up on deaf ears.
So do you think that it's too late to save PvPers from leaving? Like, do you think that the hardcore, the competitive PvP community, you know, the same people that want to see an ELO implementation, for example, and see all this new content, the people that are at max rank and are running pre-mades and are GMs of, you know, PvP guilds and such, do you think they're going to wait for 1.9 to see these PvP changes, or do you think they're taking off?
If they don't provide some new content, fresh content for the PvP community, that would be completely the wrong idea, in my opinion. To even go about ignoring and just to appease us until they get around to implementing some permanent fix for the solution of PvP. They need to develop something fun for the enjoyment of the PvP community, because right now you only have the warfronts. Open world PvP, even months ago, it evolved into Zerg versus Zerg. That's all it is. There's no competitive nature to world PvP. Even the closest you get to a competitive match is when you do have pre-mates in a warfront.
So what can they do? Like, what do you think Tryon needs to do to, like, what kind of content, I'm saying, that they would need to add? What does the PvP community want to see to keep them interested, keep them competitive, keep them from leaving? Is it more open world stuff?
Rated warfronts would be a very good first step. And implement a leaderboard that is coming 1.8 to actually track teams. That would be a really good first step.
So you want to see team support, like to be able to actually form a team, like say in the same method that you would go and form a guild, get a charter, get some signatures, have an official team, and have
amazing.
It tracked.
That would be amazing. Because in a recent article, they said that Arena is not massively multiplayer. They don't want Arena at all. It's not on their radar to even implement it. But on the other hand, you know, the instance fight consisting of maybe 15-20 players to have a rated warfront match would be it would be pretty entertaining. I'm sure that even people that don't PvP on a regular basis would definitely check it out, and if they liked it, they would probably participate.
Well, if they did implement rated warfronts, there would have to be an ELO system, which, for those who don't know, I don't actually remember what ELO stands for, to be honest, but an ELO system is essentially, it's a rating system that will attempt to pair you against, in your matches, your PvP matches, will attempt to pair you against other people of similar ELO rating. Then there's
I'm glad
things
you're pointing
like,
that out.
If you're familiar with like League of Legends or the World of Warcraft Arena system, both of those games use an ELO system to determine matches, and your ELO will go up or down based on what the game determines is the difficulty of that match for you. Such as if you're an ELO rating of 2000 and the game pitted you against a team who has an ELO of 1600, your ELO is actually much higher than theirs in that case. So the favor is in towards the team that has the 2000, which means that if the 2000 team wins, they're going to gain a smaller reward or a smaller gain towards their ELO rating than if the 1600 team beat the 2000 team.
I'm glad you pointed that out. With 1.8 leaderboards, they're introducing leagues similar to StarCraft almost, through bronze up through, I believe, platinum. That might be the first step that they're taking to slowly introduce possibly rated warfronts or some sort of rated competitive PvP to the game. It's a possibility.
Now, see, my worry is queue times, because Tryon has made it very abundantly clear that they want to completely eliminate queue times, and honestly, I think they've done that with the addition of the mercenary system, which, honestly, I still don't like it. I think a lot of people don't really like the mercenary system. But it has completely eliminated queue times. I get near instant or instant queue times almost any time of day that I decide to go ahead and queue up for a warfront. But then if they add these rated warfronts, when you go to queue up for a rated warfront, it's going to have to be separate from, you know, other warfronts. They're not going to be able to put these league teams against just a standard pub team that you're seeing right now. You know, it wouldn't be fair. And not only that, but it would really, in a sense, be a waste of time for the league team, because the ELO gain from defeating a pug would have to be so low that it wouldn't even be worth doing that match, really. That brings up the question is, if they did do rated warfronts, would there be enough interest that queue times wouldn't be sitting in queue for like an hour or two waiting for the rated warfront to go?
I hate to use this as a reference, but World of Warcraft Arena. You know, I was very competitive in WoW Arena for several seasons, from season 3 to, I believe, 8. Every season, I maintained a 2,800-plus rating in 3v3, and I'd only participate in 3v3 bracket. And you would only get consistent queues at prime time. If I would queue up, let's say, in the morning, I could sit there for 2 hours without a queue, because there was nobody even around my rating for me to even queue into to actually play against. It would be the same issue here. At some point, your rating, you wouldn't be able to queue against people, because it would be absolutely unfair in a rated system for you to fight, let's say, a fresh team starting out using WoW system. You started out at 1,000 in their most recent system, and you would work up to 2,800. There's no way you should even be paired against that kind of a separation in skill. You have to wait for the actual competition to be there to queue against.
Another problem with, like, I'm actually glad that you brought up the WoW Arena again, because we do it pretty often on this show, bringing up World of Warcraft as a reference. Another thing with an arena system and an ELO system is that usually, like in World of Warcraft Arena, like it's a good example. Most teams would do their 10 matches for the week, because it was anything, I forget the exact reason why you did that, actually. It was something like anything past 10 matches was too big of a risk, or you just didn't gain anything on your ELO. So people would do their 10 matches for the week, like every Monday or Tuesday, like right on the reset, and then they wouldn't do arena for the rest of the week, which means that queue times for, you know, when everybody's already done their 10 matches for the week are just gone.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and for years when I was playing World of Warcraft, I wanted this so badly to have a decaying MMR value to prevent that. If you don't stay active throughout the week, you'll lose rating regardless. I wanted that so badly, and that's what they would need to do for any...
So, I mean, how would Rift do this, though? Because ELO is a great system, and I'm sure that plenty of people that actually want to have rated teams and this kind of competitive PvP in Rift would be willing to wait in queue to have that feature there. I mean, I know I would. I wouldn't mind. I would go to just
same here.
Stuff to do in Rift. I would just wait around for it. It's fine. I'll go mess around on Ember Isle or do some five mans or something while I can be. As long as I can queue for multiple things, it'll be fine. You can even do normal warfronts while you waited on your rated queue. Not a big deal. But then there's the more, you know, fine-tuning of such a system, such as how many matches per week is somebody going to have to do. If you do a decaying system where your ELO rating will actually decay over time, then that can be taken advantage of. So how are they going to stop that? Like, what if a team intentionally allows their rating to dump, which there was actually a whole method to doing this during WoW Arena, where teams would tank their rating on purpose to get easier matches.
Yeah, and then you also have to consider people that would do boosting as well. That was also a very large factor and an issue with the WoW Arena.
You think maybe that such a system is just so open to exploits and just so complicated to balance out that maybe that's why Tryon has chosen not to do like an arena system or, say, a rated warfront?
Ultimately, no matter what system you would ever implement, there's always some way to exploit. People will find it.
I really want competitive PvP in this game. I would love it. The prestige grind drives me nuts, the favor grind. But, I mean, I do have a max rank mage. I do have a rank 27 rogue who's in just finishing off her second set, her tier 2 set of PvP gear. So it's not that I'm not unwilling to do the grind, but I would be much more inclined to do that if there was some kind of competitive PvP at the end of it that I can look forward to. Because once you have all your gear, what else is there for you to do other than beat on people who don't?
Don't get me wrong. When you do encounter a very well-balanced match where everyone's geared, it's a fun match. But then you also have the issue where in a pug scenario, does your team have the necessary healing? You can just get steamrolled because you don't have healers. And that's why I've want some sort of team-based competitive PvP. So I can pick who to play with, and then if we happen to lose, it's our fault. We lost. It's not because, you know, it wasn't the makeup, it wasn't the class imbalances. There's no bullshit. It's just pure PvP and who's better.
I'm glad that you brought up that you mentioned healing briefly there, actually, because it kind of rolls me into another concern about the whole rated thing. As much as I want to see competitive PvP gameplay and rated war fronts and even an arena, I know Trion has come out and said that the arena is not even anywhere in their sights at all. I would still like to see it. I think a lot of people would. A lot of people won't. Whatever. As much as I want to see that kind of stuff, I want them to balance stuff first. I don't want to have to play, you know, a Riftstalker Nightblade or a Nightblade Assassin to be competitive as a rogue. I don't want to have to be an Inquisitor Justicar to be competitive as a cleric. And I'm glad you brought up the healing, because a good example of the balancing issues right now is Wardens.
Oh, they're getting absolutely slaughtered right now in PTS. They're healing in PvP.
For those who don't know yet, there was a change that went through, and I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, either of you, but I believe that they actually rescinded it for the time being, at least, where they were disallowing Warden Haunts, especially Soothing Scream, which is a very powerful heal over time that stacks up to 4 stacks, and I've had that thing critting for like 2k on a tick on my Warden. Which I don't even know how good that actually is, but when you have multiple wardens stacking that, it builds up to just, you can't touch those people, and especially if there's like 3 wardens at the codex, you're not getting that flag. They're not going down.
Very true. The initial nerf was so that all hots across the board, Healing Flood, Soothing Stream, and Healing Spray could not stack from multiple clerics. And they finally abandoned that concept, and now they greatly nerfed each individual stack. So the end result is, let's say, 4 clerics stack Soothing Stream is going to equal 1 current stack on live.
This isn't even in the notes, but actually being a cleric and enjoying healing myself and really wanting to PvP as a healer myself, I want to bring this up because I actually just kind of had this thought with the warden changes that are going through and what you just described. Say in a pre-made war front, okay, if you're got all 15 people, you're all in the same guild or whatever, is there even going to be any reason to run multiple wardens at this point?
You can still stack them. They're still effective, but they have to cast now. There's no more running around and just using Ripple, Soothing Stream, and Healing Flood anymore. And in the occasional deluge, you actually have to cast. Because of this, you're going to see Sentinel Purifier become more of a desired PvP soul because the hots are less effective.
That's exactly actually what I was just about to bring up was I think this is going to probably promote more purifiers in PvP, especially considering that I believe they're working on changing the purifier shields, especially the new AoE shield. Which I forget the name. I believe it's something of the ancestors. I don't remember what it is, but it'll shield up to 5 party or raid members with a fairly high damage shield that scales off of attack power, or sorry, spell power. And they're changing the shield so that they prioritize, so that the shorter cooldown shields will not override the 1 minute and the 2 minute cooldown shields, and they will also prioritize players that are not currently shielded, which. With the warden, coupled with the warden changes, this tells me that purifiers are going to become much more popular in PvP.
It's definitely going to be a nice sight to actually see other souls become desirable in PvP, not just warden, sentinel any longer.
Well, let's roll right into that too, because that's something else that I want to see more of, is them empowering more soul combinations in PvP. I enjoy Rift PvP. There's a lot of problems with it. There's no discussion there. There's a lot of issues with PvP right now, but I still really enjoy it. And a very good portion of the community still does, albeit a minority, but a good portion. And a big part of that, I think, is the fact that in PvP, your build looks a lot different than the way you build for, you know, PvP. For example, most or a lot of clerics who DPS don't run 51-point builds, save for some inquisitors, which, if you do a 51-point inquisitor, you're going to put out a lot of damage, but you're going to be relatively squishy. So there's more room to hybrid is what I'm getting at, except that a lot of those hybrid builds aren't viable right now. You know, there are some that just stand out that everybody's running, like a Chloro Dominator hybrid, or a Riftblade Paladin, or Assassin Nightblade. But for the individual calling, you have, what, maybe, I would say no more than maybe two viable options, really.
I think it comes down to the utility weight versus damage in the choice here. For utility, I'm going to use Rogue, because that's what I play. And that's what I'm very familiar with. Almost all my utility in PvP is within the Aristocrat tree. All my mobility, all my defensive cooldowns pretty much are there. That's what makes Nightblade Riftstalker so popular, is because you get Twilight Transcendence, Twilight Shelter, you have your shield, your Rift Barrier, and then you have another cooldown for 30% damage reduction for 10 seconds from Riftstalker. You have a nice pool of defensive cooldowns that you can just chain after one another while you're being completely offensive. Most other souls don't have that kind of utility of mobility or defensive cooldowns at all.
See, I think that all goes hand in hand with how crowd control works in PvP, which I've brought up a couple of times very briefly on the show, but now that we have you on, maybe we can talk about this a little bit more too, because I think that the crowd control rules for PvP, how often you can be CC'd or how many CCs you can suffer before diminishing returns kicks in and you become immune to CC, I think that's a big part of what limits the utility of these other soul combinations, because the majority of my PvP experience is from a mage perspective. And as a mage, mages are, in my opinion, pigeonholed into using either a Chloro Dominator or Warlock, some combination of those three souls. And more recently, it's been Dominator has been the more popular one to run, because the dot mechanics or the dot damage of a Warlock is almost non-existent at this point. They're almost completely useless. And with the change to the Attunement of War and the loss of the Archmage soul, the PvP soul for Mage, Mages lost a lot of damage from that.
Rogues lost a lot too from Infiltrator.
But like, I would love to play like a Stormcaller, you know. I had a Stormcaller spec that I ran kind of just for fun. I didn't play it whenever I wanted to be competitive or wanted to really grind out my prestige or grind out my favor. But if I just wanted to mess around, then I would play a Stormcaller. And Stormcallers for a while there were actually really popular because the Lightning Burst was hitting extremely hard. I was getting like 5k Lightning Burst crits on full Valor targets. Some people were getting even higher than that. But that has since been nerfed. Stormcaller has since been changed to how they use their charge to improve the crit damage of their water-based abilities. Now they basically proc an instant cast Icicle whenever they do a lightning spell. And that Icicle doesn't hit for anywhere near what Arctic Blast used to hit with a full building storm up. But what I'm getting at is that the Stormcaller relies, is very squishy spec. It doesn't have all these defensive cooldowns like you were talking about with Nightblade, but it hits extremely hard. The way it's going to survive is by controlling its target. There are several root mechanics. Almost all of the water spells that it's going to cast are going to slow the target by at least 50%. I believe some of them actually slow by 70% or 75%. And that just doesn't work right now because the crowd control rules, as soon as you hit with an Icicle, you're using up one of those CC diminishing return counters. And then when you hit with your Raging Storm, which is going to automatically root them if you have it talented, that just used another one. After that, they've used God knows how many Break Freeze and God knows how many are left, because they have, you know, like Riftstalker, Shadowstalk will break you out of a root or a snare or whatever. Riftwalk for the warrior will do the same thing. Plus you have a Break Free. Plus you have Cut and Run and God knows how many others. You have your Flash of Steel that can do the same thing too if you go with the Blade Dancer. There's so many ways to break these that by the time you cast two, the Stormcaller is out of tools now. And they're just going to die.
It's very true. At the moment, my favorite build in PvP is running Marksman Ranger. And I actually have access to Break Free, escape artist, and there's also a vial I carried around that will break any CC as well. So I have three break freeze right there. And then anything that can root me or slow me, I can break it with my my improved getaway, which makes on the double free me from roots or any slowing abilities, and that's on a, I believe, a 20-second cooldown.
Yeah, there's just so many ways to break out of CC. Why do you think that we still have this? What are your thoughts on how strict the crowd control limitations are?
I think that each source of CC needs to have its own diminishing returns. Stuns to stuns, roots to roots, slow to slow, incapacitates by themselves. Then I think that would work for Rift's PvP. However, I did like WoW, their diminishing return effects. Partly because through the development of add-ons, you were able to visually see your diminishing returns for yourself on a player and on yourself. So you knew when you were safe, and let's say you could cast as I played a Holy Paladin. So if somebody used a interrupt on me, okay, I could visually track their cooldowns. But here in Rift, you have to mentally track everything through CC use and diminishing turns.
Now, I'm okay. I think it ups the skill cap a bit to have to mentally keep track of what's been used. You know, if you know you're up against a melee rogue that has Blade Dance, for example, and you know that they have the Planar Disruption, which won't silence you, but it'll interrupt you, and you know that they have a Weapon Barrage, which will interrupt you and silence you. So after you've been interrupted twice, if you're in a one-on-one, you know that they are out of interrupts now. You also know that maybe you were stunned off the start, and now you were silenced by a Weapon Barrage. You know you're okay, you know, you're in the clear for CC. It would be nice to have a UI element to see that, because in a Warfront situation where there's 15 on 15, you don't know if the guy that just changed targets to you was just CC'd by somebody else.
That would be nice, to be some visual UI element to be able to track a target's diminishing returns, so you know if you can properly use something on or not. Because, you know, using a long duration cooldown on a target, you kind of just want to face playing your death sometimes.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've tried to start to PvP on my clerics. I'm really enjoying my cleric. I really like the Inquisitor spec, and one of the most powerful things for an Inquisitor to do is to get you relatively low, I would say probably about 50% health, and then do a Nicer's Rebuke, which is their 51-point root ability that's a channel that stuns the target and deals massive amount of damage over 3 seconds. And once you have all of your cleric dots up from, say, a Bolt of Depravity proc, your Vex, and your Sanctioned Heretic, which are your three primary dots, you got them at 50% health and you do a nice ears, you can usually get the kill if you get the stun. I don't know how many times I've used my 1 minute cooldown nice ears rebuke and they were immune to the stun. So I get the damage out, but they just teleported to my face or teleported behind me or charged me and they can just drop me.
Might I add that 51 point ability at the moment does not abide by the line of sight rule.
I noticed that. Or I thought I noticed that. I hadn't actually confirmed that, so that's good to know. That's a bug, though, I believe, because that was something that they had issues with in previous patches for several other channeled abilities.
Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned earlier about the Warrior's Purge from Void Knight not being affected by line of sight.
So speaking of UI elements that are going to help you kind of assess the situation, there's an add-on. Maybe you can tell me the name of it, because I don't know if you use it. I discovered it recently. I tried to find it again before the show. I browsed around Rift UI, and I browsed around Curse.com. I couldn't find what it was. I wonder if it's actually maybe been taken down or something. I'm not sure. But there's an add-on that will actually inform you of your opponent's build. It uses the abilities, the buffs, to calculate and what abilities they use to calculate how many points they have to be down a certain tree and figure out what their spec is. And then it will actually display that on your screen. Now, currently, the default UI has virtually nothing at all to help you identify even what calling your enemy is, never mind what build they are. What are your thoughts on add-ons having this kind of power? Because this to me sounds like it's a very unfair advantage if you have this add-on and your opponent does not.
To be perfectly honest, I don't use add-ons for that. The only add-ons that I actually have, I have a DPS meter. That's it. In raid, having situational awareness, nothing is better than that. And it goes for PvP as well. I can look at a player, see what buffs they have, evaluate how they what they cast and how they cast it. I know what I'm playing against. I know how to counter it, just from that quick evaluation of what they're buffed with and what they cast. To a newer player that is not aware of the different builds and what buffs to look for, and definitely it the add-on usage would definitely help a newer player. But in my case, I feel I am more reliable than the add-on.
Like I said, I think I like to think that I'm pretty good at judging my opponent's spec by seeing, you know, how they move, like what kind of strategy. Like if I see them teleport across the screen, like use two without hitting a target, I know that they have Shadow Warp, which means they're 26 points Riftstalker, and they're probably an Assassin Riftstalker or the Bloodstalker spec. So I know what to expect. However, most players, I think, aren't as familiar with, you know, all of the most popular specs or the cookie cutter specs, and probably can't identify them as quickly.
That is true. When I first started, what I did was I went around and I looked over town calculators to learn what different builds were able to do. And I was reading root abilities, I was learning talented abilities, because in PvP, knowing what your opponent can actually do, you learn how to counter what they can do to stop you, basically.
Do you think Trion needs to implement some kind of default UI element to be able to identify your enemy? Because, I mean, I know I personally at least want to see their calling. I want to see, like, a calling icon on my target portrait.
That actually is a wonderful idea, to show what their main spec is. To show their primary point distribution. Like, most of my points, I'm spent a marksman. How goofy they are, unless you can actually scroll over the little icon and read what it is, it's going to take you a while still to learn what each individual icon is for each of the souls.
That's a great idea, I think. I don't really like the idea that an add-on can tell somebody exactly where my points are, exactly what my entire spec is, all 66 points of it. But if there was a default UI that UI element that showed your target's calling and had a soul icon, like say like a Chloro Dominator is 34 points Chloromancer, 32 Dominator, or 35 Chloro, 31 Dominator, and so it shows me a Chloro icon, that would be actually really nice to see, because sometimes you see the little clover buff and you're not sure right off the bat, especially considering, you know, like Wardrobe, for example. You can't just look at somebody and really tell right away, and it might take you a second to fish through the sort of buff soup and find the ones that, oh, well, okay, there's a Hellfire Blade, so he has to be a Nightblade, you know. But then there are the other buffs that are auras or given from, like, bards, for example. If there's a battle bard in the group, in the enemy group, there's going to be 5 motifs and 3 anthems, and there's going to be at least 8 buffs on them that aren't theirs. And you could very easily mistake them for something that they're not.
I'll give you a prime example that I've had issues with multiple mages. I always go after the Chloros, because they do have potent heals, if they're able to heal. I've actually mistaken mages that were not the Chloro, because they had the Chloro buff, but they were Pyro Dom.
Yep, and if they're not actually actively casting something, then you just can't tell. Like, if you see them casting a Vile Spores or a Nature's Fury, then you know, or a Void Life, then you know what they are.
That's a dead giveaway. Then it's a dead giveaway. If you like you said, if they're casting an actual Chloro spell, but if you're charging into the beginning of a battle and you see that there's a Chloro buff up, you know there's Chloro, and trying to distinguish which one is actually your correct target, that can be a little tricky, unless they cast.
So let's talk about the level 40 to 49 bracket, because there was a bit of heat on this on the forums a while back. I haven't seen anything about it recently, to be honest, which kind of, you can correct me, maybe you've seen it, maybe I haven't looked in the right places, but I haven't seen anything about this recently, and that baffles me, because I think this is a huge issue. The 40 to 49 bracket isn't very fun to play when you're not a 49 twink, per se. These 49 twinks are able to have much, much easier matches, very much in their favor, and acquire favor at maybe the same rate, or almost the same rate, that they could if they were level 50. Except that they're honestly probably gathering favor faster, because their victory rate is much higher. Being a 49, you have access to all the same, like, runes and consumables that a lot of the 50s have access to, which gives you a huge advantage over anybody who's level 47 or less. And you can lock your experience so that you do not hit 50. You can stay 49, and you can stay 49 and can farm favor until you have enough to get the best possible PvP set. You can't get the weapons, but you can get the armors. And then when you ding 50, you'll be a rank 1 with the max PvP set, which I've seen so many people have.
Ultimately, the most suitable fix I foresee is just putting a level cap on all the PvP gear for 50. So, at best, they can accumulate 150k favor, and then ding 50 and buy their some of their beginning set. 150k will still not cover the full set, though.
So you want to see a favor cap for level 50, or anyways, because there is a level 50 requirement on the gear. There's just no prestige rank requirement on the gear.
I mean, you have to be 50 to purchase the gear, period. You have to be 50 to wear, yes. But I think they should implement it so that you have to be level 50 to even purchase PvP gear.
That would be an excellent solution, then. I bring this up because it's not just the 40 to 49 bracket that's getting ruined by this. It's also the ranked war fronts at level 50. Where you get into a warfront that is ranks 1 to 20.
And they have superior gear because they pre-purchased up to the current rank 36 gear. And now they're wearing the best possible armor set when they clearly should not technically be there, when they should be up in more like, I believe it would be 25 to 36 bracket.
Exactly. What do you think the whole attraction is to the XP lock feature? I mean, outside of twinking, what's the point of XP locking even anyways?
I've heard arguments from people, they don't like the Valor system, they don't like coming into PvP and being paired with people that have so much time invested. You know, I know you wouldn't like playing your mage against my rogue. It wouldn't even be fun for you. And that's a lot of the concerns of new players coming into PvP, that actually the most balanced PvP is the 40-49 bracket, excluding the twinks. It is the most balanced.
See, that sounds to me more like a design flaw than it does, you know, something where, oh, well, you're enjoying the 40, you know, it doesn't sound like, oh, you're enjoying the 40 to 49 bracket. Well, let's just allow you to stay there. It sounds more like they should have improved the 50 experience.
Treyarch has been going through steps to make twinking not viable. They've been removing runes for the level 40 to 49 bracket for the 30 to 39 bracket, so that you really can't twink out. A popular way for you to twink out was to take the blue or epic augments and apply it to the low crafting gear, and they're removing that possibility now. They're going through and making so that it has to be applied to a certain level item.
You mentioned time invested, so let's touch on time invested a little bit. 40 to 49 bracket being so fun because, you know, like you said, people don't like the favor system, or they don't like the favor grind. I believe that they've done several things to make the favor grind and the prestige grind a little bit easier over the past few patches, although it's still very long. You think it needs another nerf?
When I played up to rank 6, oh my, that was an obnoxious grind. But because I had to go through it, you know, I was resentful for newer players coming in to have an easier time progressing in, so they could do it in less time. I felt like completely the time I spent to attain this was just completely thrown out the window at that point. But in the end, it still was more beneficial because it permitted more people to come in and be competitive in nature. So in the end, it was the best, but still, they need to taking consideration the player's investment into attaining these things, because it doesn't make people happy when they spend time, and it's rather difficult for people if they have multiple jobs to get on and still be max rank in a relatively short amount of time. These people want their time valued.
Don't you think that's a little more important to value the time of, say, the new player? I mean, I'm not saying make everything so that you can hit level 50, gear up in a week, and be competitive with everybody who spent months of time grinding out their prestige and grinding out their gear. But I'm more getting at it's the same kind of thing that's going on with the PvE right now in the raids, is, you know, if you get to attain it first, or you get to clear it first, isn't that also kind of an advantage in and of itself? I mean, you've had the gear longer. You got to have it, you know, when other people were still doing that really long grind, and then they made it easier for other people to catch back up to you. at some point, that's going to happen in both PvP and PvE, and it's going to happen in just about any game you come across.
Oh, it does. It, no matter what game, WoW nerfs PvE content, Rift does the same thing. They make content easier to access. But with PvP, I think it's particularly different because, you know, it's a pure grind. It's nothing but a grind. Whereas PvE, you take a raid group of players and you have to function as a fluid unit to get content cleared and out of the way. Whereas PvP, you can go in by yourself. That's where the competitive PvP comes in. I'd like them to layer something over top of the grind. So once you're done with it, there's something there for you to actually participate in.
Do you think that adding more PvP content at the max rank would actually take some of the heartache away from making reaching the max rank easier?
I wouldn't say easier. I'd say meaningless. Because right now, being max rank, it's a gear advantage. That's all it is. There's no skill involved with it. And the hardcore players that have been harping on the forums that they want competitive PvP, some form of it, these leaderboards, if you've checked them out, they're in no way at all relevant to anything competitive.
Yeah, they're listing firsts and totals, and it's more of a, somebody on the forums used this reference, more of a, like a slash play type stat. And, you know, when you type slash play, you see how many hours you've spent on the game. That's kind of what the leaderboards are reflecting right now, not competition.
Exactly.
So what would you have them add to the leaderboards?
They would need some sort of system that would calculate a value of a player, which I believe that they're already on track for, because they have introduced divisions from bronze to platinum. When I was on the PTS testing it, I was introduced to a platinum league, and it showed a kill list, how many kills we had. It's not really the type of competition that I'm looking for, but I'm sure that there's somebody out there would be into topping the kill charts, for example.
So for those who aren't familiar with it, I'm actually not very familiar with this, the divisions. Maybe you could clarify what the divisions are and how the divisions are working.
From what I was able to gather, it's going to go from bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. There's also divisions as well, which I'm not entirely sure how they're going to divide up the divisions, whether it's going to be server-based, faction-based. We are in the dark with what the actual factors are. But ultimately, they're saying that some of the factors that they did announce to us were going to be time played, your current rank in PvP, and I believe your current total PvP kills, and your total favor acquired are some factors.
So you think that divisions are possibly in the future going to be used to prioritize who faces who in public war fronts?
I believe that is a definite possibility, and it could even lead into some ranked war fronts.
That would be cool. I think I would really enjoy that, because I don't remember if StarCraft II actually uses an ELO. I don't think it does. I believe StarCraft II, if anybody has played StarCraft II, I don't know if you have, Myth, but StarCraft II, you basically build up a ranking within a division, and when you get to number one, after a certain amount of time in number one, you get promoted to the next division. Like, I believe I got up to gold, which people are probably laughing at me right now because gold isn't actually all that great in StarCraft 2. But that would work out, and I think that would probably eliminate a lot of the complication of the ELO system as well.
Don't feel bad. I was a SimCity builder in StarCraft. Hey, I just did it because I enjoyed it. That's how I like to play. I just sat in my base as a Terran, fortified it, and I was happy.
Do you think the divisions are going to satisfy a majority of the PvP community that want this kind of competitive play? The fact that, you know, let's just assume that they're not raid warfronts. Let's assume that the warfronts are going to be that, you know, there's going to be the platinum warfront and the gold warfront and the silver warfront. Do you think that's going to satisfy the community?
If they would actually do that kind of a pair up, yes, I think it would ease the storm, but it's not going to be an all solution fix to the end game PvP that Rift is missing. There has to be something there for us, other than just a grind and just repeatedly play the same war fronts over and over with no purpose to really PvP. People need a purpose. There has to be some goal for us to attain.
What kind of priority do you think the PvP community really has for open world PvP content? Because right now, there's the simple PvP rifts, which a lot of people see as just being, like you said, I don't remember if you said it on the show or off air, to be honest, but that it's a Zerg, you know. If it isn't a Zerg, it's still, it's like a grind, you know. Like, I play on a PvE server, and people are opening PvP rifts all the time, and they're completely unchallenged, and it's fun when you get a couple of fights in, but it's still kind of boring, because in between your little open world skirmishes, you're just running the shards back and forth. So I personally want to see more open world PvP content that has some newer objectives that are a little bit more engaging, such as something like fortress sieging and stuff.
I would like to see something involved with this actual cities between the factions, where you would get some sort of reward for going and attacking the other city, organize a raid of 20 people, or organize a couple raids of 20 people, and we could go attack. And then the group that, like, let's say, gets a tag on the boss, they get rewards for it.
I think there's a lot of potential for city raids. I used to love to do city raids in World of Warcraft, and there was, it's very faint in my memory, but there was actually a daily bonus, or maybe it was a weekly, to go and kill certain NPCs in the enemy faction city.
Yeah, there's a good quest for killing the city guards. At the moment on live, due to the world event that's going on, there's actually a weekly quest, or maybe a daily quest, for heading over to the other city's main boss, and killing it. And it gives reward for doing so, but the war's almost so insignificant, what's the point to do it?
So, if I'm a new player, what might be some new friendly builds that you would suggest for me?
Usually, if you can heal, of course, healing, because damage, when you first step into it, your damage is going to be just, so I say, godly awful. When I started the game, I actually ran Bard from rank 1 through 4, because my damage, I could not actually kill anybody up until I was about rank 5. This is during the old system, when it went from procedure rank 1 through 6, so I ran Bard 1 through 4. I believe that was also partly because of the gap in the actual PvP gear from rank 1 through 6, because it was rather significant then, and the gap also got worse from 6 to 8, then it was an absolute nightmare, which they finally corrected. All the beginning gear got buffed. They actually did away with rank 1 gear. I believe your first set now is now equivalent to the old rank, I want to say rank 3 gear. So they're making steps to make it easier for the newer players that do come in, so they can compete with the higher geared and more invested players. Is it necessarily enough? Yes and no. If you make it too easy, then the people that took the time investment to acquire the gear, they'll feel resentment and more likely just not want to participate. So it's a hard balance.
So you have any tips maybe for a new player on, like, say, the best ways to aid your team, or how to survive the low ranks the best?
When you're first coming in, if you're a warrior, be a tank. Be harassment. Play something that can drain mana. Control a player. For a mage, you're probably going to want to play Chlorodom. Throw out your AoE mana drains. Drain healers if you can. Be supportive to the team. For a bard, pretty self-explanatory. Heal, throw your motifs, your buffs, refresh it. And because you are playing these key support roles, because they are so potent in PvP because of the buffs, you will be targeted. And one of the ways you can avoid that is keeping your distance. If you can mesh yourself with a group of players, more than likely you won't be targeted. And if you do get targeted, bait whoever's focusing you to come out and let your team pick them off.
I got a couple of tips of my own, actually, that I want to share if you're a new player getting into PvP, or you want to get into PvP. If you're easily focused down, if you're squishy, if you don't have a lot of valor, or you're running a high damage, low defense spec, one of my best tips that I can give you that I've recently, only recently, picked up on, I really don't know why I didn't pick up on this sooner, don't AoE. Honestly, do not AoE, because as soon as a player that does not have a current target is hit, they will acquire you automatically as their target, and they will retaliate. So if you AoE, and there are five people in that group that just cleared their target, all five of those people are now targeting you.
It's just like staring at a hornet nest.
It is. And the other thing I would say, too, is anything that's like a beam-type channel, like Void Life, Nicir's Rebuke, or anything that has a... Even Cadence, I mean, you have to Cadence. Cadence probably isn't as obvious, but anything that would really give you away, because I know that whenever I see the Void Life particle effect, the Void Life beam, it's very recognizable, and I can just visually trace that beam back to the target, and I know that that person is a 51 chloro, and I'm going to go straight to them.
Yep, and that's another thing that you reminded me. You, for rogues, if you're a rogue and you're listening to this, use a gun, because you do not fire any tracers.
That's an excellent tip. I actually never even thought of that. Like, I've known that, and I've always continued to use a bow because it had a particle effect. I'm like, oh, that's so much cooler that when I fire, you know, on a powered shot, there's a little green glob that comes out. But yeah, when you have a gun, you're right. That actually becomes an advantage in PvP. That's excellent. I got one more tip that I want to share with you people. The Codex is currently my favorite Warfront to play, and one of my biggest peeves in the Codex is people standing on the rock. Okay, so let me just make this clear to you. There might be some debate. I don't know how many hardcore PvPers are listening or how you feel about this myth, but to me, standing on the rock that overlooks the flag at the Codex is a death spot. You will be picked off. People can teleport and charge up to you. Assassins, any rogue with stealth, is going to stealth their way up the side of the rock and come up behind you, and being on the rock isolates you from your teammates. If you're squishy, a better location for you to be is to be on the ground between the Codex building itself and the rock. Like, if you're coming from a Defiant side, then...
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yep. Your key spot would be with the Codex building on your right and the rock on your left. But be on the ground, because being on the ground, you can be reached by your healers easier, which smarter healers, in my opinion, are going to be down with the melee because it's harder for them to be picked out than if they're standing on the rock healing. So you have less line of sight issues with your teammates, and it's easier for you to disguise yourself among the masses than if you're standing out on the rock.
Mm-hmm. Very true. When I go to Codex, if I rush the Codex, that's where I stand. I'm basically standing next to the giant pillar, and I focus anything down that I can see, especially if they go and try and touch the flag. If there's multiple people around the flag, of course, AoE. AoE interrupts people trying to cap the flag. I know it's fan-out spam, but come on. As far as people standing up on the rocks, I personally usually go run across Vault, and I will take Statue, and I come up behind the people, the Guardian side, on the rocks, and I push them off with Repelling Shot.
Yeah, that's another great reason not to stand on the rocks, is you can be pulled down. You know, warriors with Sergeant's Order or Rift Summon can pull you down, or anybody that gets up on top of the rock with a knockback, which... almost all of the class, I think all of the callings, especially even in their cookie cutter builds, have some sort of knockback. So they can knock you off the side of the rock, down near Statue or the scope, or they can knock you off down by the flag, by the Codex, where you'll be easily picked off, especially if your team is losing the fight for Codex. That was something that I did as a warrior. My warrior is in 58, he's in the 40 to 49 bracket right now. And I'm running a champion warlord build. And the reason why I run that is because I don't expect to do a lot of damage right now because I'm not 49, I'm not twinked. But what I can do is I can put out a good amount of damage, I can spread healing debuffs, and more key thing is I can use Sergeant's Order from the warlord to pull people off of the rocks and off of the cliffs and pull them into my group where then my team will pick them off.
Yes, it is, that pull. Mm. And speaking of warriors, if you can protect a healer by harassing a warrior to make them pull back to get healed, you're doing your job right.
So you have any closing thoughts for our listeners?
Just, hey, if you see me out there, say hi, as I'm looking forward to killing you in the war fronts, even if I'm a mercenary.
All right, well, thanks for joining us, Myth. Great having you on the show. I think we've got a lot of PvP discussion out there, a lot of good tips and information for our listeners.
It was fun.
We're always looking for new guests to come and join us on Overcast, so if there's any area of Rift that you have extensive experience in or are especially passionate about, be sure to contact us via email at riftovercast@gmail.com, on our Twitter at riftovercast, or simply leave us a comment below with your desired topics. Also, be sure to send us your listener questions for the developers to be used in an upcoming episode. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, through the iTunes Store, or using the link on our blog. Also, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/riftovercast. Overcast is recorded every Wednesday night and aired every Friday morning each week. And as always, we want to hear your thoughts and opinions on both the game and the show. So be sure to leave us a comment below, and we will see you next week.